Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 211.
This week on the podcast, the election year Olympics are upon us. Who will win at swimming? Who will win at the vault? Who will win at being president? Stay tuned.
Hillary experiences a post-DNC bounce with voters and billionaires.
And Donald Trump just wishes babies understood sarcasm.
Plus, scientists, can we find a way to make Marco Rubio pregnant so he can suffer at the hands of his own abortion beliefs?
And Jill Stein chooses an anti-Beyonce running mate.
Even libertarians, by the way, want to label GMOs.
And finally, we have scientific proof that Trump is, in the most literal sense, a short-fingered Bulgarian.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
You can also find us watching the Olympics.
Watching all of the Olympics.
We get very into the Olympics. If you're a regular listener, you know this, because this is our third Olympics round.
Wow, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We really come to play when it comes to the Olympics.
We do.
And that is because we started in an election year, and the Summer Olympics always are pegged to an election year.
Yeah.
So last year we had, you know, Mitt Romney versus Barack Obama versus us having to watch
London.
A lot of gymnastics in London.
Right.
This year we have Donald Trump desperate to get some headlines against our desire to watch, you know, synchronized diving in Rio.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a lot competing for our attention.
Yeah, I
at the
watched
moment.
The Olympics all day yesterday.
Well, you had no choice. I mean, they only come once every 4 years, slash if you count the Winter Olympics once every 2 years.
Yeah.
And they're the only thing that really is like a good antidote to the conventions.
It really is.
Because then the Olympics are about not politics.
That's right.
They're about us getting to be excited. For example, Russia's in the news a lot. I couldn't be more excited to see Russia's gymnastics team. They're all the artistic events, they do really well. I enjoy watching their teams very much.
Yes.
I'm not going to worry about the fact that they might be hacking into various private computer servers in the U.S. because I'm just going to sit back and enjoy the fun of watching some very serious ballet-trained, you know, athletes.
Gymnasts. They're
compete.
Going to lose to the Americans,
yeah,
who are
everyone's,
better athletes.
The Americans are better athletes.
But if you're looking for
beautiful
gymnastics, then you should try and find the Russians somewhere.
They're going to do it. China, also likely up there with them.
Yeah.
So the opening ceremonies were this week. They were on Friday. They were a little kind of like, all right.
Well, they're broke.
Which is what we were expecting because they had no money to make them.
That's right.
And there was a curious segment where Gisele Bündchen just walked the entire length of the stadium.
I have a feeling they were like, we have no money. Somebody get Gisele on the phone.
Yeah, that's exactly what they did. They were like billing it as her last runway walk.
Right.
But the Olympics stadium is not a runway walk. And
well,
she wasn't.
Wasn't it?
I mean, I guess so. So basically, it was just them playing Girl from Ipanema repeatedly and then Gisele Bündchen walking the entire length of the stadium. And then there was a weird dance part where people in pink afros came out and did what was a kind of dancing that I thought was pretty subpar, considering that all of the dancers were Brazilian people.
Really, the only important thing to take away from the opening ceremony, despite the fact that it was all sort of about, you know, global warming, not global warming specifically, but I mean, it was all about the environment, taking care of the planet.
Right.
It was the Tongan flag bearer. Like, let's be honest.
Yeah, the greased up,
if you saw nothing else,
unshirted Tongan flag bearer.
Get yourself to the internet right now.
I mean, that's worth your time.
That's it.
The Parade of Nations is my favorite part of the opening ceremonies, usually. Even, the one exception is I think that China put on enough of a spectacle that I was, like, in it. I have often said on this podcast and in real life that I think that China should be hosting every Olympics.
Yeah, well, they're getting back to it again. The same city that hosted the Summer Olympics is about
to
host the Winter Olympics
again.
Thank
God, because China puts on a show. They're not afraid. You know, they have 1.7 billion people or something crazy, according to the Parade of Nations count.
Sure.
They're not afraid to spend all of their money on a dumb spectacle that has nothing, that doesn't improve the lives of people there at all.
Right.
Because a planned economy can get away with that. I've also said that I think if we could host the Olympics in North Korea.
Yes.
That would be an opening ceremony to remember. They basically practice every year by doing their own opening ceremony at the Mass Games.
All you have to do is look up photos of the Mass Games.
I mean, that's an opening ceremony waiting to happen.
That's what you're looking for.
I was like, maybe China could bankroll North Korea doing it. I feel like North Korea would have enough of an incentive in showing the imperialists how they'd won that they would just like not even, like there would be no letting up. It would be like the most important event that had ever happened there.
You'd be afraid to go as an athlete because you might end up in a work camp. But
right.
I mean,
no, I mean, you would want to be careful as an athlete.
Right. But we as viewers at home
are looking for a North Korean opening ceremony for sure.
Yeah.
But in any case, the Parade of Nations I love mostly because I like to look at the population count of every nation on Earth. Turns out a lot of nations on Earth have a smaller population than, like, the neighborhood I grew up in.
Right.
Which I did look up this morning. Mm-hmm. My neighborhood that I mostly grew up in had 38,000 people in it.
Yeah.
The neighborhood that I was born in had 62,000 right. people in it. Those are both neighborhoods in Manhattan, so they're next to other neighborhoods right. with tens of and thousands of people.
Where we live now has 30,000. Granted, it's people. Within, but it's know, in a, within Los Angeles. Right, it's but within I mean, like, West Hollywood the second has 35,000 people.
Yeah. Right. Some of these countries had, like, 35,000 people in them.
Right?
I mean, and there was one country that had 10,000 people.
Yeah.
Can you imagine being on an island nation with only 10? It was somewhere in the South Pacific.
Hey,
being on an
do you, like,
island.
You know everybody and you can't.
And you can't get off the island because you're on an island. I mean, that's a nightmare.
Is that how that works? Once I mean, you're on an island, you
can never
there?
Leave. Yeah. Okay. That's how it works. No, it's a little alarming to see, but it's also kind of funny to see. It's a real, like, spectacle of wealth gaps. Because nations that have, like, 30,000 people but are in Western Europe send, like, 200 athletes, 300 athletes. Nations with 30,000 people in Africa will send, like, 3 athletes.
Yeah.
Like, you get to see, like, for example, Australia has, like, 5 million athletes competing. Yeah. There's, like, 7 people in Australia. I think that the population right. of Australia was comically low. It was yeah. something like 30 or 50,000 people.
But they're always in the water, I mean, and 300,000, at the beach, so it sort of makes sense.
Like, I'm... 30 million. I don't know numbers. No, but they're always, yeah, they're Summer Olympics people because yeah. it's just summer there all the time.
Right.
But I mean, you see them show up
yeah.
with bleach blonde hair, mm-hmm. wearing a fancy outfit with a dumb blazer because everyone chooses to wear a blazer for unknown reasons.
It's not,
even Hoda commented on the blazer situation.
Yeah.
I mean, it was that egregious. And then you see a nation like Ethiopia.
Yeah.
Which has great running prowess.
Yes.
Show up with, like, maybe 30 athletes, like, yeah. something like that. Like, and that's, like, a nation famous for their runners.
Yeah.
So, like, and then you see a lot of nations in countries where they don't have white people, where all of the delegation seems to be white for some reason. Like, yeah, there are a lot of British people competing under the Zimbabwean, or whatever, you
yeah.
know. Is it called Zimbabwe now?
Yeah, I think so.
That's the one. It used to be Rhodesia. Now it's Zimbabwe. I lose track of some, like, Zaire.
Oh,
like, I
know.
Lose track
yeah.
of some of the African sure. nations,
yeah.
what flag they're competing under.
Sure.
But yeah, there's a white swimmer who always competes for Zimbabwe, which did have a white population for a long time, but it was mostly run out in, like, I think the 70s. They had, like, a military coup there. But you see a lot of nations where you're like, oh, really?
Sure.
Mali?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Most of your athletes are white? That's weird. You know, like, a lot of that going on.
Yeah.
So it's curious. Also, a lot of them went to college in the U.S. because
yes.
you see a lot of people that are like, she, so-and-so from you know,
USC or Stanford
right, USC,
volleyball,
who's competing for
right, yeah.
Tonga, you know, like,
yeah.
stuff like that doesn't make any sense. In any case, you will find us in front of our TVs for the next 2 weeks for a number of hours. That's not fair to
no.
us or them.
Yeah.
But the gymnastics has started, so we're we've dove in right away.
Head first. Yep. Michael Phelps is swimming.
It's all the same
it's
people.
Happened. Yeah.
And so aside from that, though, there's still election news going on.
Yes.
Because it hadn't quite started during the beginning of the week. Who knows
right.
if there'll be election news for the next 2 weeks? I hope not.
Before we get there, we want to remind you, dear listeners,
right.
that there is a story that we're not even really necessarily going to dive
cover,
into on this
but
podcast.
But we are going to just make sure that we mentioned it.
Right. We just assume that you know, as listeners to this podcast, how terrible of a human being Roger Ailes is.
Right. I mean, if you've been out there
in America.
If you've
been alive in the world, then
right.
you
heard
it.
A story about him sexually harassing basically
right. and
every
you probably
female
thought
that's
to yourself,
ever worked with him.
Sure.
Yeah, that
right?
makes sense.
And that's what we thought to ourselves, too. So
yeah.
therefore decided not to cover it on the podcast. But it's gotten deep enough that we just want you to know that
we know. Right. Roger Ailes has resigned.
Yes.
So he's out of the picture, except that he's not out of the picture because now everyone's stepping forward to be like, also, he harassed me.
Right.
So Fox News, as imagined by Roger Ailes, could very well change in the next few years.
Yeah.
We don't know what really is going to happen to Fox News.
Yeah.
And a lot of the controversy is stemming from the fact that Fox News talent has been coming out against Roger
yes.
Ailes. So, in any case.
Anyway.
We are not going to report extensively on this story.
No.
It happened during the DNC, I think.
Yeah.
And so it happened
just,
right before
right.
the DNC started. So we didn't really report it. But
we just want to confirm for you that
that's
Roger
a real
Ailes
thing
is
that
a
happened.
Garbage person.
He's a garbage person and he's gone.
Right.
He's out.
So, bye.
It's over. Bye. Yeah.
Anyway.
But to begin the week in Hillary.
Yes.
This was the week to be Hillary.
Yes.
The death.
Well,
we talked last week about how according to our very unscientific test of being people watching the DNC, we thought that by the fourth night, they had sort of done a fairly good job of kind of...
of selling damaged goods, as I think you put it.
Right, selling damaged goods to their whole coalition. You know, they did a little outreach to the Sanders people. They did a little outreach to Republicans.
A lot of outreach to Republicans.
Too much outreach to Republicans. But I mean, by the final night of the DNC, and it was a slow start, they had sort of figured out who in the tent they needed to say hi to.
Right. It was a convention that I feel like future conventions will strive to be like.
Which
I
mean, is interesting really because considering the amount of dissent they were facing there.
Right. And but they did it was a good, solid, was well just in produced. Terms of, exactly, production.
They squashed dissent quietly behind
good
the scenes.
Speeches. There was like good sort of like build up to her on the last night.
Right? And then she didn't was, like, totally fuck it up, which was a surprise to all of us.
We didn't have to look at Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
A single time, so except for the time she got booed, which was great.
Yeah.
But so it was a fairly successful convention by television standards, and that has translated into a fairly large bump for Hillary Clinton in the polls.
Right.
It also helps that Donald Trump is having like his worst week ever.
Right, and we're going to get there.
We're going to go into
those
details. We're going
to talk specifically about some of these.
Yeah, the polls are like wacky.
She is now, after the RNC, which granted is not necessarily a great time to take polls, but everybody always does it anyway because you want to see if the person got a bounce or not.
Right.
There was about 2 or 3 days of panic where it was like, oh my God, Hillary's going to lose. It's close again. The 538 predictions were like 50-50, basically. And everybody was like, you know, hair on fire, going crazy.
Yes.
Now it looks like it's like
Hillary
in a landslide. Well,
she got like a 15-point bounce, basically.
Basically.
I mean, it's looking like not a single place is trying to vote for Donald Trump anymore.
No. She's ahead by about an average of 8 points. Right. Polls have been anywhere as close to 4, but as high as 15.
Yeah, I mean...
Nationally, anyway. But the state polls are really...
They're interesting.
...what is interesting and also bad for Trump. Because the places that he has to win are...
She's now up by double digits in a
like,
lot of them.
Big time.
She's up in Michigan.
Yeah, double digits, Michigan.
Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania, double
New
digits.
Hampshire.
New Hampshire.
And those polls... I saw a poll... You say that there's a poll that... If there's polls showing Kelly Ayotte is down too. I saw a poll recently where she was down 10 points.
That's the same. Maggie Hassan. Because he's down... Trump is down by like 15 and she was down by 10.
Yeah.
So she's at least
getting...
So their
sitting senator might get unseated over all of this, which is fun and
interesting. Well, and she was in the middle of some...
She was in the middle of some shit this week that we're going
to
talk about in a little bit.
Yeah.
But Hillary's also up by margins, by large margins in Florida.
Yeah, like anywhere between like 6 and 10 in some polling.
She's like going to win Virginia.
Right.
Tim Kaine is her running mate. So like that was the whole point.
There were reports this week that she has pulled all of her advertising dollars out of both Virginia and Colorado. Mm-hmm. And that is
it's a sign
huge,
that they feel pretty confident.
A sign
in those
that they
states.
Feel confident, and also is huge because they can spend that money to put him on his heels in some places that he should obviously win.
She's
that
ahead.
Are close now.
She's ahead in Georgia.
Yeah,
right
there
now.
Was a recent poll that had
she's
her
up by
ahead
four in Georgia.
Yeah,
that's was, Georgia, you guys.
Georgia, yes.
That's the state of Georgia.
Yeah, she's down 2 in Arizona,
that's
which is
state.
Basically tied. That's margin of error
right.
style. 2 points there. North Carolina, margin of error. And
right.
that seems like it could potentially be winnable because
Obama
won that
in 2008.
So it's not as if Democrats can't win there. The Georgia is the real
that's a
head scratcher. But I mean, there's huge, you know, city populations
right.
there, metropolitan areas and
Atlanta
stuff.
Atlanta is in Georgia.
And,
they
yeah,
have major
exactly.
cities in Georgia.
Right. Large
they
African-American community,
universities.
Which does well
they
for
have
her. I mean,
human beings who have thoughts
brains.
In parts of
yeah,
Georgia.
Exactly.
It's, I mean...
Yeah.
A lot of the things.
Tied in Missouri.
I mean, some of these are states that, like, Donald Trump has to win
right.
to be even a legitimate contender
right. These
in
are,
this
like,
race.
The base states
right.
for
he
him.
He has to win these
like,
states.
Once he's lost Georgia, then, like, the whole thing
right.
starts to crumble,
right, because if the swing
basically.
States are going to Hillary regardless,
right.
he better hope that he wins literally every Republican state in the Union and then some extras.
Right.
Some weird places that are kind of, like, odd states that...
Right. But
where
the
Trump's
odds,
message appeals, but those aren't delivering
those aren't
right now.
Delivering right now because the odd places where his messaging should be delivering are
Michigan,
Ohio, Pennsylvania,
Ohio,
Michigan,
yeah.
maybe Wisconsin, maybe New Hampshire has a lot of white people who are sort of more working class ish
right.
and has like a libertarian.
They're
libertarian ish,
but
like,
they, but they're
also,
also
that's like what like a 2 or 3 whole electoral votes. I mean, like
yeah.
Who knows?
And they're
you know,
not.
Like,
they, I mean. His kind of Republicanism probably resonates there, but they are ultimately like a fairly like sort of even keeled state. Aside
right.
from that weird year that they had the Tea Party take over there, because
yeah.
then they elected all women after that. They
yeah.
were like, enough of this. And I feel like New Hampshire, his like bombastic, making enemies everywhere style of doing things is not really what New Hampshire politics is about. So that's a state where only his message appeals and his sort of persona is going to be very distracting.
Yeah. And the nice thing for Hillary is that, yes, she did have the convention last week, but she is probably going to be able to carry this lead into next week. And I didn't even hear her speak once the entire week.
In fact, if she can just stay out of the news.
I mean, she can.
Donald Trump is self-destructing before our very eyes.
If he keeps doing what he's doing, then she can go into hiding for the next 6 weeks.
Which I think is a smarter strategy for her.
Solid.
That's why she doesn't have media appearances, because no one likes her when she talks to the media.
Right.
But I mean, if we're selling damaged goods, we should figure out the best way to sell them.
Right. And sometimes that's just not reminding people.
Not saying anything. That's right. Well, I was talking to, for something I'm working on, for an article I'm working on, I was talking to a political scientist at USC who was basically saying that the difference between her media understanding and his media understanding is partially that in politics, sometimes no news is better than bad news. Like in Hollywood, all news is good news.
Right.
If you made it into the press, you've done it. Even if you made it into the press for murdering a baby.
Right.
Like your name is out there. And he's sort of operating on the sort of with the mentality that all press is good press.
Right.
And in politics, all press is not good press.
It's not.
Too much press about a bad thing can derail you entirely.
Yeah, well, they spent 4 or 5 days on this Khazir Khan story.
Right. And he would not...
That didn't have to happen because 3 or 4 of those days were days that he kept bringing it up himself.
Yeah.
And it was like... Dude,
stop
what are
mentioning
you doing?
This guy's
name. Go for it if you want.
Do what you want. Do what you need to do.
If you want.
Right. But I mean, this is not a guy with a savvy understanding of media as it pertains to politics. This is a guy with a savvy understanding of how to keep your name in the headlines.
Right.
That's great for selling Trump steaks, or not, because those failed.
Right.
It's great for selling Make America Great Again hats, maybe, but not even, because it. Unlike in the world of celebrity gossip, in politics there's an alternative. You know, celebrity gossip, you can either not pay attention or pay attention to the most salacious story. The most salacious story sells the magazines. If you are in politics, the most salacious story can just drive people to vote for somebody else who they don't even know.
Right, exactly. And they don't even like.
Yeah. I mean, we should remind you again that
nobody likes Hillary Clinton.
Likes Hillary Clinton either. She's a very unpopular candidate. Both her and Trump have underwater ratings when it comes to likability.
Yeah.
So this is more a story about him driving votes away from himself than even her driving votes to herself. But at least it happened on the heels of an event where she finally made a good impression on everyone.
Right.
So it's actually like, if she could just stay quiet for a while.
I know.
Just wait until there's a blip.
Right.
Send Tim Kaine out there with some dad jokes, but only in certain states.
Yeah.
Then just, you know, coast.
The one thing that she did do this week, and she didn't even really do it themselves, but they're starting to trot out a lot of big endorsements.
Yeah.
Some of them are Republicans, some of them billionaires,
making me very
some of them both, most of them making us uncomfortable. But
all billionaires make me uncomfortable.
Sure.
However, there's a difference between Warren Buffett and Meg Whitman. So we're going to go right now through the list of semi-Republicans, and then we're going to tell you which semi-Democratic endorsements there are.
Yeah.
Billionaires don't play by the same political rules as the rest of us, so a lot of them kind of dip in both.
Yes.
You know, dip in both pans. What's the metaphor I'm looking for here?
Never heard that one, but I
like it. I know. They dip
in
both,
pools,
both pans. I don't know.
Yeah.
Mark Cuban had even indicated that he might be supporting Trump early in the primaries.
Yes.
And he has now come out as a Clinton endorser.
Yep.
This week, the big news was that Meg Whitman, who was our former GOP gubernatorial candidate in California.
She's a
Republican's Republican. I mean, she's a California Republican, but she's an asshole. She's the CEO of Hewlett Packard.
Yeah.
She's
going to raise money for
her.
Just endorse for her.
She said, I'll vote for Hillary. I will talk to my Republican friends about helping her, and I will donate to her campaign and try to raise money for her. So she's all in for Hillary. Bloomberg, as we know, spoke the DNC. He's come out for Hillary. He's been registered as every party, but I still think of him as a Republican because that's what he is. Seth Klarman, who's a hedge fund manager, and he's a GOP donor, for the most part. He's already donated to Chris Christie and Marco Rubio and Jeb Bush in this cycle.
Yeah.
Politico is now reporting that he will be supporting Clinton because he says Trump is just unacceptable.
Yep.
Mark Benioff, who is, he's a CEO. He's sort of famous for what is like a semi-progressive cause because he often boycotts states that have homophobic laws. But he's not affiliated with any party, and he has given money to both Obama but also Paul Ryan. So he's the Trump model of donating to everyone is right. one that he embraces.
Right.
And he has been, he's come out for Clinton and will be donating. He's donated to progressive groups as well. And then Alice Walton of the Walton Clan. The Walton Clan is very conservative, but as we know, Clinton was on their board.
She was on the board.
She's probably friendly with Alice Walton.
Probably.
That's not what you're looking for. But Alice Walton has been donating to a pro Clinton group. She's already donated $350,000.
Yeah.
Then there's the semi-Dems.
Yep.
There's the Warren Buffett.
Warren Buffett spoke at one of her events this week.
Right, Warren Buffett.
Yeah.
But Warren Buffett is always...
I think he introduced her.
He can always be trot. I mean, he's like, you know, him and George Soros are like the two boogeymen of the, you know, that the right kind of trot out to like talk about how much, how big money is threatening democracy or whatever. Yeah. Oprah Winfrey had supported Obama in 2008, but she's come out for Clinton. And Sheryl Sandberg is... People say that she has some like political ambitions. I don't know what... what form those ambitions take.
Sure.
But she has been apparently discussed as a possible Treasury Secretary by Clinton administration. I don't want to see that, by the way. It's like, I get that Sheryl Sandberg ultimately has like, her heart's in the right place. She wants women to succeed.
She wants
women.
That's what it is. Yes.
I don't think that she has a great understanding of how women succeed. Yeah, I think
she's just leaning in for the one woman candidate in the race. Basically, she's doing right now.
She's like leaning in for the 1%
two,
women.
But anyway,
you know, she's a woman of the 1%. So there's Chaim Saban, who is the producer behind Power Rangers and a bunch of other.
Yeah.
Children's
television.
And they've
been with the Clintons for a long time.
He's been with the Clintons for a long time. He's a big Israel hawk.
Yeah.
So he's already hosting fundraisers for her this year
and
doing, you know, Hollywood stuff, Hollywood fundraisers. Yeah. But he's the kind of Democratic fundraiser that we don't like because he's a hawk.
Right.
And then J.B. Pritzker, who's a venture capitalist, he does not usually donate in the primary cycle, but he stepped up his spending because he wanted Clinton to defeat Sanders because he thought that was the best way. But this logic drives me nuts. The best way to ensure that Trump didn't end up being the president. Which people who tell me they're donating to Clinton as a defensive move when they're billionaires and her economic policies benefit billionaires drive me nuts.
I know.
There's not been a single poll in the history of this election that has ever shown Hillary Clinton with a better advantage over Trump than Bernie Sanders.
Oh, I know.
Not a single one.
That has been causing me to rage a lot. When the polls were getting close and everybody on my Facebook who was a Clinton supporter was panicking about the polls being close. I was like, where have you been
for
like
literally
the last
close.
1 year? A whole year.
A whole full year, 12 months. The polls have been close. That's where they've been.
Right.
There's not ever been a single poll that shows that she's out of danger with any of these loons on the right. I mean, that's, and there were early on in the race, we saw polls where she was losing in battleground states to Cruz and Rubio.
Oh, yeah, we're lucky that we got Trump.
And was 1 point ahead of Trump. Yeah, and Bernie Sanders was up by like 19
points.
Crushing
all of them.
You know, I mean, this is like, this fuzzy math has been driving me nuts because it's part of, I was saying to Brent earlier that I think that one thing this election cycle has taught me is how to read the news more critically.
Mm.
Because obviously I try not to be a conspiracy theorist, but there's also been elements of how the race has been covered that I've suddenly I've dawned on me that most media that I trust has always been in it for one candidate.
Well, and we've talked about specific instances
on this podcast
before.
The New York Times, exactly.
We've talked about Politico. We've talked about so many of these.
Now there's been sort of proof that there was kind of a media blackout with Sanders. You were talking about.
Oh yeah, there was a study, a media study,
Harvard or somewhere that.
Right. The Sanders media blackout affected the outcome of the race. Like, like we needed a study for that. But I mean, like,
but I mean,
obviously,
it's nice to have a study for that.
It is, yes.
But I mean, I think that in one way that that has helped me is that in being able to follow the news more critically, a lot of these claims that I sort of used to accept as common knowledge, like, well, Clinton just has a better chance of beating Trump because she, like,
that's
these are claims
reality.
That I was able to look at numbers and be like, I see how this spin works for you guys. I also don't see this being the
facts. It's just not fact-based.
Right.
Right, yeah.
And, like, I had never really thought about spin as it pertained to the Democratic race. And I've been thinking a lot about that, as you might imagine. And that's been interesting. And I think it will ultimately make all of us better voters.
Yes.
So I think it's a good thing.
Yeah.
But that's one of those things that drives me nuts, where I'm like, I mean, the whole year we've been showing that she's a weak candidate compared to Trump. So, like, why are we pretending that she had to win? I'm a billionaire who needs her to win. No, you're a billionaire who needs her to, you know, deregulate financial markets.
Yeah.
Like, pull your life together.
Yeah. But we have a feeling Clinton's good poll numbers are going to bleed into next week
because
this was a bad week for Trump. So, it, you know, last Sunday we talked about it was the beginning of his
Kazir Khan madness. And that
it
continued.
Bled into this week and it was of his own making.
Yeah. And then, so we're going to take you, the Kazir Khan thing took the whole weekend.
Right.
We're
going
to give you a day by day account of all the other things that happened to Trump.
Right.
We're going to begin with Tuesday.
Right. Tuesday
Monday, we were still talking about Kazir Khan.
We were. And Tuesday, actually, a little
bit,
too.
We still were, too.
Right.
But something funny happened, and so we kind of... This was the beginning of the end of the Kazir Khan story and the beginning of the endorsement story.
Right. Where Trump kicked a baby and the baby's mother out of his rally.
Yeah. So here's what happened, because how this happened is hilarious.
It's so funny. And if you haven't watched the clip is short.
The clip
because
is short.
He says the first quote and then only speaks for about 60 seconds and then kicks them out.
Yeah.
But here's exactly what
happened. Here's what he said. Okay, so there's a baby crying. He says, don't worry about that baby. I love babies. I love babies. I hear that baby crying. I like it. What a baby. What a beautiful baby. Don't worry. The mom's running around like, don't worry about it. You know, it's young and beautiful and healthy, and that's what we want. 60 seconds later, he's talking for a few minutes and then says, actually, I was only kidding. You can get that baby out of here. That's all right. Don't worry. I think she believed me that I love having a baby crying while I'm speaking. That's okay. People don't understand. That's okay.
Yeah. And then there they went.
Kicked a baby out of his rally. Hugging and kissing other people's babies is like 50% of the job of running for president.
Running for president. That's what you do.
And then it led to a lot of photos being released of him uncomfortably holding babies.
Yes.
You know who can hold a baby like a fucking pro?
Barack Obama.
Because it also involved a lot of people suddenly releasing pictures of Barack Obama just killing it with babies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's known that Obama loves kids.
Yes.
I mean, that's like a well-known fact about him. And he's great with kids. But... seeing pictures of Donald Trump uncomfortably trying to hold babies away from him and Barack Obama just like playing with babies in the Oval Office is just more proof that the Obama should never leave.
I know, right? Oh, happy birthday, by the way.
Oh, yeah. He turned
President
55.
Obama. I'm sure you're listening.
This week. Yes, as you do weekly. Okay, moving on. Wednesday.
Yeah.
We're
so
still
the Tuesday,
reeling.
The Tuesday scandal was ridiculous.
But
the Wednesday thing,
led
it
us
started
in,
getting
it
real
led into
on
a
Wednesday.
Real scandal on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Where, so on Tuesday, the Wall Street Journal had reported that the U.S. secretly paid Iran $400 million in various currencies around January after they released those four hostages.
Right.
The kind of, there was a lot of dissent, there was dissension over what that money was, whether it was money we owed them from, you know, previous sanctions, whether it was their money or our money.
Right. Of course, because it happened around the same time that these hostages were being released.
The GOP called it a ransom.
A ransom. And... it sort of looks that way.
Right.
I mean, I'm not even going to lie about it because, but it's obviously, you,
but
can't,
so the administration,
you can't be seen as paying
a ransom,
money
no.
for people because like then that's just.
Then everyone will shake you down.
Exactly. So,
but it was, the administration is saying it was part of a failed arms dispute from decades ago that where they owed a payment to Iran of $1.7 billion.
And they said the reason that it was cash is because, and this makes sense to me, is because we don't have a banking relationship with them.
Right.
You can't just write Iran a check. We can't anyway. We could write England a check if we wanted to, or send them a wire transfer.
Let's not. They're politically
a
mess right now.
Right. You can't send Iran wire transfer of $400 million.
No.
We can't, as America.
Just deliver,
we just don't
billions
have that.
You can just deliver $1 billion to them.
That's
cash.
All you can do. It comes on a pallet
of
various different currencies, and that's how you get
That's how you get it.
That's how you pay Iran.
So Trump stepped into the fray when he said he saw a video of this cash delivery in Iran as part of a briefing.
Yes.
Now, no such video exists.
Right.
That's confirmed.
They also
by...
haven't had a national security briefing yet, the Trump campaign.
Well, right. And they should never have one.
They should never have one.
Right.
Harry Reid actually this week said that we should be giving him fake information. And he meant it, too.
I mean,
he wasn't kidding. But anyway.
They should be.
Yeah.
But so he was speaking in front of a crowd on Wednesday and said, I'll never forget the scene this morning.
Mm, yes.
Iran, I don't think you've heard this anywhere, but here,
right,
Iran provided all of that footage, the tape of taking that money off that airplane.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the thing. There's no way to directly deliver currency to Iran. So we delivered pallets to Switzerland, which is where all dirty money goes through.
Right, exactly.
And then they're transferring it to Iran.
Right.
So no pallets ever landed in Iran.
There's no footage of any money going into Iran.
No one's delivering cold, hard cash to Iran.
That's not...
Switzerland is writing the check after we deliver the money, I'm pretty sure.
Yes.
So...
he kept running with it, despite after U.S. officials saying that it didn't
exist. There's no such video.
Right.
He ran with it. He said it was an attempt to embarrass the U.S. by the Iranians.
Yes, and he described it very specifically,
this
too.
This is so funny.
Yeah, he said over there where that plane landed, top secret. They don't have a lot of paparazzi. You know, the paparazzi mention is genius,
it's genius,
by the way, from him. He said the paparazzi doesn't do so well over there, but they have a perfect tape, obviously done by a government camera, and the tape is one of people taking the money off the plane. It's a military tape. He knows where it's coming from, too.
Right.
It's a tape that was a perfect angle, nice and steady. Like, he knows.
Oh, my God.
It was a great shot.
It was a great shot. Uh-huh. He would know a great shot. The DP on that video really gets it. And the paparazzi doesn't.
No.
The idea that he conflates media coverage with and free press with paparazzi is so such a perfect embodiment of everything that is his campaign that I just can't even.
It's so good. Yeah.
He is a character, a television character running for president.
So U.S. officials kept continually saying that this was not a thing that existed. And finally, his campaign on Thursday decided to own up to it.
Right. It was not.
And claim that it was B-roll that he saw on Fox News of the hostages.
Right.
Coming off the plane. There was no cash.
No.
It was just footage that I also loved how he thought that it was like some top secret thing when it was something that he had seen on Fox News.
You know how secretive. Fox News only transmits to the most secure of homes.
What I will say for him, and I don't think that he should be applauded for this at all.
No.
But I do think this might be a first.
Yeah.
He tweeted on Friday that he was wrong.
Yeah. He said, the plane I saw on television was the hostage plane in Geneva, Switzerland, not the plane carrying $400 million in cash going to Iran.
Yeah.
How you would mix up those two?
Well.
What pallets was he watching getting loaded and unloaded onto this plane?
I don't know.
So many questions. Yeah. Then, okay, so that's Wednesday. Yeah. This is the Wednesday of the week. Then on Thursday and Friday, everything just like goes nuts.
This was crazy.
So earlier this week, Trump was giving on Thursday an interview to Washington Post where he kind of balked at the idea of endorsing Paul Ryan.
Yes.
Now, as the president on the top of a ticket for a major party, you generally endorse whoever...
The Speaker of the House. Or anyone in the fucking party who's an incumbent. Exactly.
And so he was asked about that, and he said, I like Paul, but these are horrible times for our country. We need very strong leadership. We need very, very strong leadership. And I'm just not quite there yet. I'm not quite there.
Right. And the I'm not quite there yet was a direct... jab at Ryan because that is exactly what Paul Ryan had said when he was waffling on whether he was going to endorse Trump.
Right. He said, I'm not quite there yet,
which he did. Yeah.
The remarks infuriated the entire party.
Yeah.
Especially Rince Priebus is good friends with Paul Ryan, lives in Wisconsin. And so he's like all up and trying to make sure that he endorsed Paul Ryan,
right.
You know, announced that him and his wife voted for him. They're good friends. Next day, Mike Pence endorses Paul Ryan.
Yes. Supposedly, he asked Trump if he could. Right. But, I mean...
Well, he's trying not to have his whole political career shot down by agreeing to have joined this ticket.
Right.
Which, by the way...
It already has been.
He's, like, not a credible person
anymore. Newsflash.
Right.
Like, you are no longer going to be governor of Indiana. And
no, you're not also a credible human being
anymore.
Going to
lose the presidential election. And you've also hitched your wagon to Donald Trump, who's going to get... I mean, it's over. It's over.
Your life
for
is
you.
Over. Yeah. It's done. So Thursday night, the entire GOP is in shambles. Ryan even suggested on a radio show that he might rescind his endorsement. He said, if I hear things that I think are wrong, I'm not going to sit by and say nothing because I think I have a duty as a Republican leader to defend Republican principles and our party's brand if I think they're being distorted. He was asked about whether there was a situation... There were situations that would make him consider rescinding his endorsement of Trump. And he said, of course there are. I'm not going to get into the speculation or hypotheticals. None of these things are ever blank checks. That goes with any situation in any kind of race. But right now, he won the thing fair and square. So he basically, that blank checks comment got a lot of media play.
The blank checks,
where he basically was like, if he crosses the line, maybe I will rescind my endorsement.
Yeah.
So Friday, Trump's team, after a week of him being the most embarrassing human being on earth, was like, all right.
Yeah.
We got to fix this.
Yeah.
So he's at a rally in Green Bay and delivers this like rambling response to like every charge that's been levied against him all week.
Yeah.
He talks about the crying baby. He talks about fundraising. And then he finally endorses Paul Ryan. He also endorsed John McCain and
Kelly
Ayotte.
He hadn't endorsed either of them.
And he'd been shit talking both John McCain and Kelly Ayotte for months.
I don't know why they would... I'm confused as to why they won it. John McCain is going to have a tough race in Arizona, especially if the presidential race is close there.
Yeah.
He's running against a woman. We've seen polls that have had that close. I think she's already a state senator. She's fairly well-liked.
Yeah.
And Kelly Ayotte is losing. I think as we get a little closer, it wouldn't surprise me at all if some of these people don't endorse him.
Yeah.
Disavow his endorsement of them. Kelly Ayotte only wins by telling Donald Trump to go fuck himself.
I know. Well, and Kelly Ayotte has already been like, I'm going to vote for our party's nominee, but I'm not going to endorse.
Right.
So she's already decided not to. I mean, that's an endorsement.
But that's, I was going to say, you're voting for him, is what you just said, Kelly Ayotte.
Basically, in this speech, Trump tries to Reagan his way out of this. He quotes Reagan, my 80% friend is not my 20% enemy, or whatever, you know,
It's
someone that's 80% my friend is not 20% my enemy or whatever.
Yeah.
And said, we're going to be the big tent party.
good luck to you.
Good luck with that.
Well, it's a big tent of white people.
Yeah, it's a big tent of every kind of racist. You can hate anyone in their party. You don't need...
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's a big tent where racist and other...
Once you're only racist white people, it's... Yeah.
That any kind of hatred is welcome there.
That's right.
If you want to hate women, that's probably fine.
Yeah.
You want to hate any race, that's right. Cool.
Any race.
You want to hate immigrants, gays, go for it. You want to hate gays,
transgenders.
You want to hate people with only one foot. Whatever you want to do, you can hate in that party.
Oh, yeah.
Whoever
physically disabled.
Yeah.
For sure. I mean, we know that.
Yeah, exactly. Already. Like, if you, whoever you want to hate, you're welcome to hate there. Yeah. They're a big tent party for hatred.
Yep.
They'll allow it. Yep. Think Progress noted that in his endorsement, Trump cited zero policy goals that he shares with Ryan, McCain, or Hyatt.
Sure.
He acknowledged with Ryan, he said, we may disagree on a couple of things, but the speaker is ultimately a good man and a good guy. With McCain, he said that he holds him in the highest esteem. He's never apologized for questioning McCain's war hero status, by the way. And then Hyatt, he said, was a rising star who will continue to represent the great people of New Hampshire so very well for a long, long time.
Except maybe not because of you.
Right, exactly. Well, in a post interview, he had questioned whether weak people like Hyatt should be representing us. Also, as we said, she's down by 10 points at the moment in polls, so
yeah.
It's not looking good for Kelly Hyatt. And she's running against the New Hampshire governor.
Right.
So they've both won statewide office, and Maggie Hassan is, I think, better liked.
Well,
clearly,
right now she has to be.
Right. Meanwhile, they have a lot of differences. They differ on free trade, they differ on immigration. Paul Ryan, oddly, not as hardline as Trump is on immigration. I mean, ultimately probably is, but not as. They disagree on NATO. And Ryan didn't even seem like he was that excited to receive the Trump endorsement because he kept lathering on
about
Nobody would be. I mean, he was like, I want the endorsement of the voters in my district. Like
the only reason that any of these people would want his endorsement would be to help them to get through a primary, which Paul Ryan was in. So that is, and this sort of came on the heels of Trump saying some nice things about the person that Paul Ryan was running against. So that's why Paul Ryan maybe cared a little bit. But once these people get through their primaries with crazier people, which they already have been, most of them anyway.
They want nothing to do with this.
Then who cares?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're John McCain and your primary is over, maybe it's not. I'm not sure. Has he won?
I don't think his primary is over.
Maybe it's not.
I think a lot of them are August 30th.
Oh, that's right. They are.
Because Demi Wasserman Schultz's is August 3rd. There's a lot of...
Oh, she's going to debate. Did you see that?
No.
Yes.
Ooh, that's exciting.
She finally agreed to that. I think she probably felt she had to.
Yeah, I think the final week of August is going to be a really exciting news week because there's going to be... We're suddenly very into down ticket races this year.
Yes.
We still have not posted our Who You Support down ticket, but we're going to.
We'll get there. It's the Olympics.
You guys were busy. But we are going to because a lot of those people haven't even had their primaries yet.
Yeah.
So, you can still work for Tim Canova. You can make calls for him. You can donate to him. There's some of those candidates are not yet. The New York candidates are out of their primaries.
Right.
Zephyr Teachout won her primary real big.
Yeah.
But some of these people still could be taken down by primary challengers. Some of these incumbents could be taken down still by primary challengers.
Yeah. So that's why they sort of want this now, but won't want it later.
Exactly. Will not. No, this is going to be, and they know it.
Right.
They know
that makes it.
It's awkward.
It makes it awkward for them.
Yeah. And it also makes it, I mean, some of the things, we're going to talk in a second about this Rubio Zika flub.
Oh,
one of the things that's weird about that situation is not the actual comment, but the fact that he doesn't have a real contender yet because their primaries haven't happened yet. So there's 500 people running against him from every party at the moment.
Right.
So part of the reason he has to be careful what he does and has to be like a crazy hardliner right now is because he's still in a primary race that he came in too late.
Right.
And he has, I think the Democrat who's leading in that primary, Patrick Murphy, has been sort of taking him on. But, there's 1,000 people taking him on right now.
Yeah, there are.
In any case, before we get to that, the Trump campaign is basically, at the end of this week, was in shambles.
It was basically in revolt.
It's in revolt.
And a lot of, we heard reports toward the end of the week about the RNC preparing what the hell to do if he just actually decided that he wanted to quit.
Right. Which would be the best thing that could ever happen to them. So don't quit.
To them, it would be. It would be bad for us.
My mom is still convinced that Mitt Romney is going to become the nominee. She has not given up her commitment to the idea that Mitt Romney is ultimately on election day. It will be an election. I was kind of like, that's like having an election between Mitt Romney and Mitt Romney. Then there's no race.
Well, right.
Who
are
you going to vote for in that race?
I know.
The Mitt Romney versus Jeb Bush election or something. The same race. It's like running Reagan against, Mitt Romney. Anyway.
Yeah. But Trump campaign, there were a lot of reports coming out of the campaign that after they had spent all of these days off message because it was sort of like they weren't talking about any of the
right,
things.
They're just
that
doing weird, petty nonsense.
They're kicking babies out of rallies. They're talking about Kazir Khan. They're talking, you know, they're not doing any of the things. They're not endorsing, you know, the Speaker of the House.
Right. Like, and then they're embarrassingly having to back down the next day.
Right. These are not the things that, like, the campaign needs to be focusing on.
No.
And so, obviously, everybody within the campaign is like, dude, what the fuck are you doing?
They feel like they're wasting their time.
Yes.
Because it's starting to feel like this is a lost cause.
So, there were some, like, Republican insiders that, like, spoke to CNN specifically, like, and some of them were even supposedly his campaign staff, and talking about all the way up to Paul Manafort, that were, like, that they were fed up.
Yeah. Like, when your campaign manager is talking to the press behind your back...
Yeah.
To tell them that he's fed up with your campaign.
Right. They wanted him.
That's a sign.
They said privately that they wished that he would apologize to the Khan family.
Of course. Like,
of course. Other people wanted him to.
I have said repeatedly, maybe too much for me to repeat this again. But how the GOP gave up the veterans issue.
I know.
Is mind-boggling.
Well, that's the other thing, too, because a lot of Republicans who were speaking on the about the campaign wished that he would have not just apologize to the Khan family, but apologize to all military families.
I mean, they should.
They should.
This was a very embarrassing chapter in a party that used to claim that they better represented veterans.
Yeah.
Now, they never have,
right.
But, I mean, they do love wars more than the Democrats.
They do.
I mean, not this year's Democrats.
No. But there were also some reports that Rens Priebus had talked to Trump himself several times throughout the week, conveying that all the senior party officials and also
donors.
The donors were like, get this guy back on track.
Yeah.
Because what the hell is he
doing?
How
are they going to fund this campaign since Trump is secretly broke if, you know,
if they
can't get any of their donors to agree? I mean, half their donors have jumped ship already.
Yeah.
Meg Whitman is a big Republican donor.
Yeah, she is.
You know, she's famous for being a big donor.
Yeah,
that's how she
Republican.
Got into politics.
Right.
The reason she ran for governor is because she thought she was so important because she was such a big donor. So,
right.
You know, like people like that jumping ship is nothing but bad news for someone like Rens Priebus, who, by the way, I can't believe Debbie Wasserman Schultz was forced to resign and Rens Priebus has not been hung at this point. Like,
right?
I mean, this is two election cycles in a row he's fucked up.
I know.
He's like, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, for her many faults, wrangled a predictable result out of a wacky year. Now,
right.
I don't think that was a good thing.
No,
I'm not
I don't
happy
either.
She did it.
No.
But I'm saying she came in as an establishment Dem
she
figure
did
and
the
did
job
her
that
job.
She was supposed to
exactly.
do.
Exactly.
We can hate her for
we
it.
We can
but,
hate her
I mean,
for it, but that was the job she was brought in to do.
Right.
This guy has been there for two cycles and fucked it up royally.
Right. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, you remember the autopsy report after 2012
well,
when they were so
they wrangled Mitt Romney at least out of the last one. Like they sort of tried to save it at the last minute, but Mitt Romney was the worst choice that they could have made for that particular year.
Yeah. They didn't really have better choices that
no,
year.
No, but they were
That's
running against Obamacare and they chose the guy who first instituted it.
Exactly.
Like that boggles my mind that they let that happen. Anyone would have been a better choice than Mitt Romney that year. But I feel like this is the point where you're like, Rince, get a different name. Because what a stupid name. And then also, resign immediately. You're fired. Like, it's just like, I can't believe they're letting him keep a seat.
I know.
Maybe, I mean, it must be like with Paul Ryan. No one wants it.
Well, that could
Who would
well
want to
be
the head of the RNC right now?
Yeah.
I mean, like,
Thankless
they would have,
job.
Like an alligator would make a better head of the RNC than, than Rens Priebus at the moment.
Yeah.
But even an alligator probably wouldn't be stupid enough to take the job.
Oh, God.
Speaking of stupidity.
Oh, man. This is...
Marco Rubio's filled with it.
Oh, he's truly filled
with it. He's gotten in some hot water this week.
Florida is also continuing to be filled with terrible things, by the way.
And most
outside
recently...
Outside of Marco Rubio.
Right, outside of Marco
and
Rubio.
And alligators. Eating babies.
It's now also filled with Zika.
Yeah.
It's the state with the most Zika of any state in the Union.
Of course it is.
It would obviously be.
Right. But even...
Like, what
even,
state could be more Zika-filled than Florida?
Even if Florida...
Was where North Dakota is.
Right, it would still have.
It would still have the most Zika.
Yeah, outside of it being humid and having mosquitoes.
It has to do with the character of Florida.
That's right.
That's all. Like, Florida just is the natural home for something like Zika.
Exactly.
So Marco Rubio is sort of embroiled in the discussions of why Congress cannot pass a Zika relief bill to save its life.
Because the Democrats are trying to get Congress to come back from recess right now
to deal
with something about
Zika. It's an actual crisis, you guys.
Yeah.
Like, Zika's, like, pretty bad because we don't want to have all the mothers in Florida on top of everything else they're facing living in Florida have babies with microcephaly.
No.
Like, that's just not what we're looking for as a nation. And we don't need to be.
Nope.
Because we have public health services in this country.
That's
we
right.
should at least
we
be
should
activating
be.
them. But so the big issue is that as part of providing relief for Zika relief, they, because it's mostly a women's health issue,
right,
there is sort of some dissent over where the money should be going, because I think Democrats are trying to say, like, women's health organizations should be getting the money because they're who are dealing with these issues on the ground.
And if women find out that they are pregnant and have Zika, then
where are they going to go? They're not going to, they're going to go to their local women's health facility.
Yes.
And so Planned Parenthood, the boogeyman of the right, is among the organizations they would like to see get funding like this.
Right.
Now, what Marco Rubio doesn't want to see is a single abortion due to Zika virus.
No, even of
though
course not.
This is the one issue that most people agree you should be able to get an abortion at almost any stage of your pregnancy over. And this is, by the way, why I say that there is no such thing as regulating abortions responsibly. Because someone like Marco Rubio can exist in the world where government policy can be suddenly harnessed to say you can't get a late-term abortion with when you have Zika virus and your child is going to be born with microcephaly and is going to be not only a financial burden and emotional burden to your family, but also to the state, who is going to have to provide services to that child.
Totally. Yeah.
I mean, if you don't feel that you can take care of a child with microcephaly, the state's going to have to take care of that child.
Yeah.
And that's not going to go great for anyone. So these are reasons why, that's why we said at the top, if we could figure out how to make Marco Rubio able to get pregnant, I think maybe he would understand the terror of being a woman who could, because he has also said, he said in a national debate during this cycle that he didn't think you should be able to get abortions for rape or incest either.
Right.
So he's somebody who thinks that if you are raped and then contract Zika virus, so you're giving birth to a baby with microcephaly that your rapist impregnated you with, that you, that's not a situation where abortion is warranted.
No, that's right.
Well, that baby should be given a chance.
That's right. Well, though, shouldn't the woman be able to shut that down anyway?
Right, well, of course, if it's a legitimate rape. But I mean, like, that's a circumstance where Marco Rubio believes that
you should still have,
you should still have this baby carried to term, even though that baby's life as a rapist baby with microcephaly might not be well taken care of with the social safety net that Florida lacks.
Right.
So, in any case, there's a lot of discussion about whether or not, because Rubio is like, I'm voting for all the Zika relief bills, but he's part of this clan that wants to get rid of funding for local women's health services.
Right, of course.
To help combat Zika because he thinks that Planned Parenthood is going to get the money.
You can't pass a Zika bill and not have money
for local
for
women's
Parenthood.
Health. No, that's... Planned Parenthood is providing all the women's health services in the whole fucking nation.
Right.
Planned Parenthood is the biggest women's health provider
yes.
in the nation. They are everywhere. They provide services beyond abortions. They don't receive federal funding for abortions. So giving money to them does not mean that that money is going towards
going
abortions.
To abortions, right.
Donors are providing the money for abortions because they believe women should have the right to choose.
Yes.
But, I mean, this is like one of those things where Planned Parenthood is not mentioned in the legislation, but it was the sort of undercurrent of the disagreement. So a bill passed in the Senate and then got watered down dramatically by the House, and then it wasn't going to get the Senate wouldn't pass the new bill. Now, Rubio is saying he'll vote for any bill, but he's also out in the news saying that he doesn't think that you should be able to get an abortion if you have Zika and are pregnant.
I feel like, how's that playing there?
Well, the logic here is nutso.
Whoa.
Because he's saying that he's this great advocate for getting Zika funding to everyone.
Right.
But he's not willing to provide money for the one thing that could prevent Zika from becoming the public health crisis that it is shaping up to be.
Yes, because that is the, I mean,
if you want to have a baby with microcephaly, more power to you.
Right.
If you end up with a baby who is going to be severely impaired for their entire life,
right.
and that burden will not just fall on you, it'll fall on taxpayers everywhere, and it will be in a huge emotional toll.
And let's face it, that is the only reason that Zika is the public health crisis that it is right now, because it's not so bad to get.
It's just a flu, but it's a mosquito-borne flu, but the problem is a women's health problem.
Correct.
Specifically, men getting Zika is no problem at all. No. We don't care if men can get treatment for Zika. They're going to be fine. The only issue with it is a women's health issue.
Correct.
So the idea that we can't provide women's health funding for it is
when that's
not
the
so
only
crazy town.
It. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's like if the common cold, you know, made women's heads explode, like then that would be a time that women's health providers should be...
Correct.
Given extra funding to deal with the common cold.
Yes.
Because men's heads aren't exploding from the cold. So, like, this is just, like, a logical extension of how logic works. In any case.
Well said.
He's an asshole.
He is.
Yes. But I wish that he could have the joy of an unplanned pregnancy with a severely impaired baby on the way.
Yeah. Agreed. We'll see what sort of decision he would want to make.
You know, most Republican daughters and wives, when they're faced with this decision, end up suddenly finding that they're more pro-choice than they thought.
Yeah, exactly.
Here's the week in other news.
Yes.
Jill Stein finally announced her running mate.
She did.
And she got the Green Party convention was this weekend, so they've officially nominated her for president. Yep. Her running mate is Jamu Baraka, who's a human rights activist. He's been on the board of Amnesty International. That's kind of like where his big credit comes in. But he's been on the board of also every other organization on earth. Right.
They were trying to get Nina Turner.
She finally turned them down. That was the right move. She has credibility within the Democratic Party that even a Hillary Clinton victory can't really rob her of. Like, it doesn't make sense.
She's
a boogeyman to the Clinton wing of the party, and that's what we need.
So,
Baraka, the only questionable thing about this choice is he has been very critical of the Sanders movement. Jill Stein is hoping to attract a lot of Sanders voters this year. And so he was keeping this blog through the entire election cycle and has said that Sanders was less concerned about actual political reform and more interested in, quote, in a tacit, quote, commitment to Eurocentrism and normalized white supremacy. He talks a lot about racial issues, but he basically, like, you know, thinks that the Sanders brand of progressivism is too Eurocentric and therefore, like, not a credible brand of progressivism. That is sort of a controversial position to be taking into a race where the Green Party might, for the first time, have a chance to become a popular, you know, he talks about it being pop progressivism. Pop progressivism just means popular.
Right, it does.
It's not like pop psychology, which is like fake psychology.
Right.
Like, pop progressivism is the kind that gets votes.
I was going to say, the Green Party needs pop progressivism.
They need that to be a pop movement.
Right.
He's also not a Beyonce fan. He was very critical of Formation. Although I take issue with his issue with Formation, which, by the way, I said repeatedly was like kind of like crazy and nonsensical and... not nonsensical, but in like, there was a sort of sense I felt like she was offering like a not so sort of well conceived commentary that she wasn't articulating the commentary she was trying to make all that well because it was like so pop.
Yeah.
And I get why that criticism exists. I also, however, think that his criticism, which he talks about her being a commodified character of black opposition, that wasn't progressive because it took imagery and symbols of authentic black radicalism and then transformed them into what he calls a spectacle of gyrating, light-skinned, booty short-clad sisters.
Okay.
I think that criticism sort of underlies that maybe in his understanding of how intersectional isms work, that he's not so great on gender issues. Because I feel like part of the Beyonce, sort of like the politicized Beyonce, is not just about black power and resistance.
No. Yeah.
It's about female sexuality being sort of commodified, but also something that women can own.
Yes, who run the world.
Girls, exactly.
Yeah.
But so, in any case, if you were wondering what I think about his thoughts on Beyonce, that's it. But so that's going to be an interesting... I mean, I think to some degree it will elevate the discussion on race and politics at a time that is a helpful thing.
Yes.
I hope he doesn't try to do the, like, Ta-Nehisi Coates method of sort of tearing everyone down in an effort to then realize he has no choices and it's too late to fix.
Right.
You know, Ta-Nehisi Coates did a lot of damage to the early Sanders campaign because he wrote two essays.
Yes.
One very popular, one that went viral that was about Sanders saying that he didn't believe in reparations.
Right. And actually, the Green Party platform
is
in favor of reparations, by the way. But anyway.
But his second essay was about how he was going to vote for Bernie Sanders.
Yes,
and that one didn't get nearly as much play. Early on, when Sanders was really facing a huge disparity with black voters, black voters, and largely due to their unfamiliarity with him.
Yes, that didn't help.
That was like the only thing that they fucking knew about him.
Right.
That didn't help. Ta-Nehisi Coates is sort of like, I think he's like new to stardom, new to this kind of academic stardom, and I think sometimes overplays his hand a little without realizing that the consequences are like quite real.
Yeah.
Because this is the first time the consequences for him for writing an academic article about, it wasn't even that the article itself was that bad. It was critical of a certain kind of thinking that did need to be kind of discussed. It was just that the way that it ended up having an impact on the race was very damaging.
Right. And it was probably, he probably didn't expect it.
No, of course he didn't, but he should have.
He should, right, exactly.
He should have. Yes. He's in academic circles. He knew what was happening.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like the New York Times being like, who is this Bernie Sanders guy and why is he here? Like,
yeah.
Like, he should have had a sense that this was becoming a kind of movement that could raise issues that he would need, that he wants right. raised, and that in pushing the discussion forward, he shouldn't shut the discussion down entirely at the time that yes. he did it.
You should have said that he was voting for him first.
Yes,
and
exactly.
then taking him to task on some issues
I'm voting
that he had.
For him because I have no choice.
Right.
Here's the issue that I have with him.
That I wish he would be better on.
Right.
Yes.
Here's why I think, though, that I'm voting. Like, that should have been one thought instead of two thoughts.
Correct.
Because that is something that Black Lives Matter got to him early enough that they were able to kind of, not course correct necessarily, but become a part of his policy discussion. And he listened to them, and that became a constructive conversation.
Correct.
The Ta-Nehisi Coates thing didn't.
It didn't.
I'm sort of interested to see where the line is with Baraka, because I think that he could either have the Ta-Nehisi Coates sort of he could either alienate voters by not being willing to talk in real terms about what the sort of practical implications of building a movement and ideology and putting, you know, getting those things together are, or he could sort of elevate our discussion about how, you know, people about how policy and race intersect.
Yeah, he also might learn to not fuck with Beyonce too.
I mean, that's pop 101.
Seriously.
You want 5% of the vote.
It's a no brainer.
She's like, she would get like 100% of the vote. Like,
exactly.
Don't even.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Speaking of third parties.
Libertarian Town Hall.
The Libertarian Town Hall. And apparently got really good ratings.
Got
it was on
huge
CNN.
Ratings on CNN. It won the demo.
Yeah.
That's an industry term, you guys.
That's right.
The demo is 25 to 54 year old viewers. And the demo is what counts.
That's right.
And I think it actually won the night, too. But but winning the demo is more important, because if only old people who don't buy things watch your show, then the ad dollars don't add up.
But I think, first off, it was really interesting. I watched it.
Yeah, Brent watched it. I haven't watched it yet.
There were some real... I was texting you, and I was like, what's happening in this right now? Because the one thing with the libertarians, and we have talked about this a lot, is that they're good on a lot of things. They're good on a lot of social issues. But then you realize that they want to abolish the Department of Education.
Right.
And they want to do
bad
this.
On a lot
and then
of
they don't, they're not, they're, you know, they want everything to be privatized in the sense that, like, you know, the police would be privatized and there would, you know, they
want
to.
Right.
Cut
they don't
any
want
sort
public
federal,
money to go to anything.
No federal funding for anything, basically. And then you're like, oh, wait a minute. That seems like that might be a giant
this
disaster.
This is why a lot of 24-year-old white men love them so much.
Right.
Because.
Well, here's the thing
those
that
are
I
institutions
would
institutions that they don't need.
Right.
Everyone else needs them.
Right. Well, the thing that I would say, you know, I think that we could get all of the 20-somethings in the Democratic Party from the Libertarian Party if we had a candidate who would talk to them and who favored legalization of marijuana.
Yes.
Because we don't right now.
Because that's how the 24-year-old white guys are with the libertarians to begin with.
That's,
it's always about fucking
it's always about
marijuana.
Pot.
Yeah.
Always about pot. So, anyway.
But we have the sense that libertarians are sort of anti any kind of regulation because they're for privatizing everything, essentially.
Which was...
And so it was interesting to hear them, or at least it sounded like it was interesting
because
to hear
I
them
think
talk
they were,
about...
They're definitely attempting to broaden their appeal. I mean, look, they're both former governors.
Right.
Gary Johnson was the governor of New Mexico. Bill Weld was the governor of Massachusetts. And you know, so they have credibility.
Right.
They're in double digits in a lot of polls. They only need to get to 15. Like the CNN poll had them at 12 this week.
Right.
They only need to get to 15 to get into the debates.
Right.
And they're trying to broaden their appeal for sure. They got asked by you know, it was a town hall, so people in the audience were asking questions. There was a black woman who had been shot in the Dallas shooting. She was at the protest.
Okay.
And so she asked them what they thought about the Black Lives Matter movement. And they were like, we both realized that our head had been in the sand about this issue. And I was like, whoa. And then they went even a step further than that. And they were like, really the only times that we feel like the government should be intervening in things is when it's like a national crisis. And they were like, this is a national crisis. So we have to figure out what the government can do about this. And I was like, wait a minute. I was like, DVR, back this
how
up 30 seconds and like re-listen to this to make sure that like that just happened on my television.
Yeah.
They said, you know, Gary Johnson is like a huge health nut. I guess he's like an extreme sport guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, but he is also, he has celiac disease.
Right.
So he's very much in favor of like,
food
labeling of GMOs. He spoke very highly of all of the work that Michelle Obama has been getting to, or has been doing to get people to eat healthier, because he's sort of like, that is a way that we could get our healthcare costs down.
Yeah.
And I was like,
I know, because those are intervention policies.
Yeah, exactly. They also made it very clear, you know, one of the knocks that at least, because a lot of Republicans would feel like, a lot of moderate Republicans would say that they align a lot with the libertarian platform. Right. But the one place they would find themselves not aligning with them would be on foreign policy.
Right, they want to go to war.
They want to go to war all the time. And they made very sure that they said that they were not isolationists. They don't want to be seen as isolationists. They just want to be seen as non-interventionists.
Right.
So they don't want to be getting involved in regime change.
Right.
But they're okay going to a necessary war.
Right. Well, you know? Of course.
Of course. So, but I think that that was obviously an attempt to, you know, reach out to some of the Republicans
right.
who yeah. might think that they are isolationists.
Well, and
are
in this year where a lot of Republicans are sort of thinking, like, do we need to be going into wars like Iraq? That,
right.
you know, that ended up being a boondoggle for Republicans,
right.
too.
Well,
so,
right, exactly.
You
yeah.
know, that's one of the things that drove Trump's candidacy
yeah.
initially.
Right.
So I feel like this is a good year for them to make that distinction and be like, we don't want to be, like, the not NATO people.
Right.
We want to be NATO people who don't just jump into wars to change regimes for, you know,
yeah,
that kind
exactly.
of thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
But, yeah, so that... They're doing a Green Party one as
yes,
well.
Yes, they are.
So
yeah, in
I'm
a couple
interested
weeks.
To see that as well.
I'm glad they. I mean,
they
should
be. They should always
this is the
be.
Second libertarian one they've
well,
done.
One of the things that ensures that we only ever have a two-party system is the fact that these third parties don't get any media coverage.
Yeah, exactly.
And I feel like if you know one of the things this early on in the race that helps people determine what kind of party they're comfortable voting for is knowing what party options there are.
Right.
And while I don't think that we should have 75 town halls on CNN for every. You
right.
know, dinky party.
Right.
I think a major established party with a national presence
right.
of any sort
who is going to be on the amount of ballots that could easily win the election.
Right.
I mean, the Green Party. A lot of the knock on the Green Party is that they are not on.
They're not on the ballot everywhere.
They're not on the ballot in every state, but they're going to be on enough ballots that they could win.
Exactly.
Like, and that's not. I'm not saying that they are, but.
No, but that's a
but
sign that we should take them seriously.
If you can,
yeah.
Then, like.
Then
yeah,
people
I
should
agree.
Have the option to know who you are.
Correct.
In any
yeah.
case, so that's exciting.
Yeah.
We also got it's our favorite time of the month. It's
it
my
is.
Least favorite time.
Yeah.
It's where we get to learn what fake jobs numbers.
Yeah, we haven't talked about it in a while.
No.
Although I think we did talk about it last month because they were terrible.
They were bad last month.
Although
yeah,
they were bad than we thought because they're
surprise,
always wrong.
Surprise, they were wrong.
Right.
But it was only 24,000 ultimately last month.
Right.
It was 11,000.
But when they announced it was 11,000, so more than doubled.
Exactly.
I mean,
But July's numbers were 255,000.
Right, which
so
was almost twice as many as they
right.
thought we were going to have.
Well,
they
they might have forecast
might
directly,
be,
and they might be right.
Because
as we know, these numbers are
right.
notoriously unreliable.
Exactly.
The unemployment rate's still at 4.9%, so that's pretty good. We're still
yeah.
we're still below 5.
Yeah.
It's also, looking ahead, they were talking about this on 538. October's job numbers are going to be released 4 days before Election Day.
Mm.
It would yeah. require a historic economic collapse. If unemployment was above 5% in November. So they're sort of thinking that the economy is probably going to hold pretty strong
yeah.
Through Election Day, which is good news for the Democrats.
Right.
Still, there are some things that are still weak.
Right. Wage growth was weak. It did go back up.
It went back up.
I think
up.
It was actually the highest wage growth that we've had in
right.
a while, but it was
but
not great. It was
we've
like
had
8
terrible
cents or
wage
something
growth
like that. Yeah, exactly.
The whole time.
It was bad, but like we've had, it was less.
It's been worse.
right. It's been worse. yes, exactly.
The share of Americans in the labor force is at a 4-decade low.
Right. Although more people were entering
right.
the job market because I think that that's why the numbers stayed at
yeah.
4.9. But yes, I mean it's still very low.
And a lot of people are underemployed still, you
right.
know. There's but some of these things are starting to improve. All of these numbers have improved a bit in the last few months. So
yeah.
So we're sort of looking at least some sense that the recovery is starting to hit regular people only
right.
7 years after the crisis is over. So, and we can see that in the unemployment rate for workers without a high school diploma fell quite sharply. It's now at 6.3%, which when the recession, that's lower than when the recession began, but also at, it topped out at 15% during the recession.
Yeah, that's
and then
crazy.
For workers with a high school diploma, the unemployment rate is down to 5%. And it was more than 10% during the recession. So we're starting to see some effects hit, you know, the Joe the plumber.
Right.
Who hopefully won't be voting for Trump, but probably will
probably
be.
Probably will be.
This fall. Yeah. And finally, definitive proof is finally here that Donald Trump has teeny tiny hands.
Yeah. I mean, we have had the proof because we have eyes.
Right. Our eyesight has given us the proof. Yeah. But finally. So
now we have science.
Madame Tussauds has a wax statue of Donald Trump.
Yes.
And finally, the Hollywood Reporter, in an effort to get down,
they have a handprint of his.
Him. Right. Yes. The Hollywood Reporter finally got in there and showed
got
us what that handprint actually looks
That's
like.
That's right.
You can see a full size printable version on their website. They have a full size version, I believe, in Hollywood Reporter.
Yep.
Here's the update. The man has short fingers.
He has short fingers.
Short, tiny little fingers. And that's a scientifically verifiable fact.
That's right.
On the basis of looking at this dumb handprint.
Right.
He is a short-fingered Bulgarian.
And by looking at his actual hands.
Yeah. He's a Bulgarian who has short fingers. That is the exact series of qualifications you need to be a short-fingered Bulgarian.
Right.
So we now, I mean, we have definitive proof that he is.
That's right.
So Graydon Carter has been right this whole time. Yep. So if you want to look, check out their website. It's there. You can print it out to size and compare your own hands to Donald Trump's.
They're probably bigger.
They've got to be. And if nothing else, your finger-to-hand proportion is better.
Yeah.
I mean, mine certainly is.
Oh, yeah.
I have perfectly
And you have small hands.
I have tiny little
hands.
Your
fingers are reasonable.
But my fingers are the right size.
Yeah.
His aren't.
No.
So in any case, our favorite Donald Trump taunt.
Which it's true.
The reason I realized, we finally found out why it bothers him so much, and it's because he thinks that it's an implication that he has a short penis.
Correct.
And he probably does.
He probably does.
I mean, nobody who acts like that has a normal size penis.
Let's not get into that scientific proof, though, just because I don't want to think
about
it. Absolutely don't. That would imply that there's a photograph or a cast of it someplace, and I'm looking
for
that.
I'm sure there is.
I'm sure there is, too.
And I don't want to see it.
Nope. Correct.
So that's the news this week. Next week, tune in. Well, we're not going to be recording next week.
I'm going to be at the Iowa State Fair.
Right. So we're going to check out our social media accounts. Brent's going to be showing us what's what at the Iowa State Fair
next week.
And then we'll be back the week after that to report on how the Olympics went for us.
You're right. I'm going
to
try my damnedest to get a picture with Steve King.
I mean, you've got to
because I
do
just
it
missed
for
him
America.
Last time I was there. I just missed him.
And you got Debbie Wasserman Schultz last time.
I did.
We should post a throwback.
I know.
Of that.
Oh yeah.
But get
anyway.
Steve
follow
King.
Us.
Follow us. We're gonna give you an update on the Steve King situation from the ground.
Yeah.
And we will talk to you in 2 weeks.
Bye.
Bye.